Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketer leaders podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn a bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn how they approach their marketing journey, and hopefully a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of e-com and direct-to-consumer strategy at Quad. We're glad to have you with us today as we feature Gary Lancina, Vice President of Product Management and Marketing at Briggs & Stratton. Gary guides product and brand strategy, advertising, and insights for the Vanguard and Briggs & Stratton brands. Previously, he's held senior marketing and strategy leadership positions with Mercury Marine, Luma Institute, BP Products North America, and Redbox. He's a Fulbright scholar with an MBA from Clemson University and a BA from Pomona College. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's a mouthful reading your credentials, and I'm so impressed. Got a lot to dive into, but let's start by talking a little bit about the journey that Briggs & Stratton's been on and your role in that transition.
Sure. Well, I joined Briggs & Stratton a year and a half ago and came here in part to help with the continuing evolution of the organization and driving further success. You know, Briggs is a brand and an enterprise that's been around for over a century. And for many of those years, its core business was making combustion engines. And I would say that is still our heart. We have a fond affinity for the power that you can derive and how you can apply it across all kinds of different things. We're probably best known for lawnmowers, but we power all kinds of construction equipment and other things as well. The reality, though, is that the world is changing around us. You know, as we look at electrification, which people are mostly familiar with in terms of the automotive space, it's also affecting the markets and disrupting the markets we serve here at Briggs & Stratton. And we have a growing electrification business ourselves under our Vanguard brand. And so, you know, my role here was initially to help keep the team focused on the right priorities, to think strategically about what the market is doing, what our competition is doing, and where we have capability, and then lay the groundwork for us to continue into the next 100 years of success in terms of power application for all of the equipment that people use when they're building things or maintaining landscapes, or otherwise out in the world doing, you know, truly, truly good stuff for the environment and for our spaces.
That's very interesting. I've got a couple questions that come to mind while you're sharing that. Mm-hmm. First, why don't you tell us a little bit about the transition to electrification in the home equipment space?
Sure. You know, if you were to go back 7, 8, 9 years, the vast majority of lawnmowers that consumers would see at their local home center or would have in their garage were powered by combustion. And that proportion has shifted over time. And there's a lot more electric power option out there in terms of what people can get for their equipment. And, you know, I think it's probably had the most profound impact in what people in the outdoor power equipment space would call handhelds. A lot of those products nowadays are almost nearly fully electrified. But for many homeowners, having a battery pack that provides 45 minutes or an hour or even a couple of hours in some cases of power, that's great for a weekend warrior. Lawnmowers have similarly seen some electrification, but there's less of a profound sort of takeover in terms of market share. And there are a lot of things that contribute to that, the nature of people's yards, how large they are, the cost of batteries. But, you know, for us, we have to be aware of that. And I think the thing that I would add there is, you know, it's one thing to talk about that consumer space. It's a very different thing to think about serving the needs of professionals. And that's where electrification takes on a few more aspects in terms of contemplation. Runtime is huge. The ability to recharge is huge. What kind of infrastructure there is, particularly for people who are out working on construction sites or going from place to place as they cut lawns across homes and commercial parks, or, you know, on the roadside in a municipality. very, very different sort of set of circumstances there, some of which make it very challenging to electrify.
I understand. So you probably have some complex customer relationships to manage. You have the relationship with your customers and helping them resell your product, if you will, and then navigating those different channels of professional versus consumer.
Yes.
What do those challenges look like for you?
Well, I think, you know, there's some common things for folks in business or in marketing that we think through, just basic elements around awareness and the attribution of brands, consideration and trial, you know, how many people have actually used something. They get a little more challenging the less directly visible or usable a product is to the end user. And I'll give you a for instance. You know, for many years, people would buy computers, but didn't think about what the processor inside was. And Intel spent a lot of time and a tremendous amount of money trying to change those perceptions and have people pay attention to what's essentially a component or an ingredient within the end solution. Now, over many, many years, Intel has succeeded in creating a set of attributes around their brand that are, when everything goes right, additive to the consumer's consideration of, is this the right product for me? We have a similar challenge as we provide battery power or engines to our customers, and not dissimilar from many other sort of industrial or business-to-business oriented organizations. We have direct customers who buy our product and use it. Many of them, in fact, the majority of them probably want our product to be additive to their value proposition. So we need to give them a means of differentiation or distinction or reliability that actually contributes to their proposition. And at that point, this is where the fun starts. Depending on the end market, an equipment builder could sell to a distributor who sells to dealers, who sell to practitioners. We could have equipment manufacturers who sell to retailers, who sell to consumers. We could have equipment manufacturers who sell directly to dealers, who sell to consumers and practitioners. And so as we think through all of the different stakeholders between us and ultimately the end user, we need to be considerate of each discrete person or organization's needs. What problems are they trying to solve? Where can we take hassle out of the relationship? Where can we add value in terms of the product attributes and how it performs? And so, you know, a lot of people come at the sort of challenge of innovation and marketing and sales thinking in kind of one step. And the reality for many of us is the thing that we sell then could be resold, you know, two or even three times before it reaches its end user. And at each level there, you got to go through this sort of consideration of, are they aware? Do they know what I've provided? Do they value it? Will they recommend it to the people they sell to? How do I actually ensure that there's that attribution? And so that's where we get into the fun stuff of not just directly selling and crossing our fingers to hope that that everything goes well from there, but also understanding that you can work from the other end and make sure the end user has an appreciation of the value of the Briggs & Stratton or Vanguard brands or any others, so that you've got this combination of sell in and sell through that is working, when it all goes well, pretty harmoniously.
I love the analogy to Intel and Intel Inside and the very investment-heavy brand campaign that Intel did over the years, which really built into what the value of their brand is. Ideally, you would evolve your brand to the point where the Briggs & Stratton engine is such a differentiator that customers almost demand it.
Yes.
All right. So how do you do that? You know, what are some of the tactics that you use to execute?
Well, I think it varies. And it varies both over time and also with the maturity of a given proposition. We have the good fortune with the Briggs & Stratton product brand of having over a century's worth of critical mass and momentum. So consumers continue to look for that brand as a stamp of value on the end product that they're buying. Because in the marketplace, there are, to be honest, more brands of lawnmowers than there are brands of engines available to power them.
Ah.
And so there are some power brands that most consumers in a market like the US have a very high level of familiarity with. But within that, they will still look for a brand they trust in terms of power. And it is true that on many products, you know, this was true in my last company at Mercury Marine, as it is, I think, here, that oftentimes it's the engine that is the most valuable component. It is the source of either delight or disappointment. If it's reliable, I feel good. If it delivers the performance I want, it feels good. So the power, along with the attributes of the end product, that piece of equipment, fit neatly together hand in glove. And when all goes well, a consumer will walk into a home center or a hardware store or into a local dealer and be able to have familiarity with the brand of power and say, oh, yeah, I trust that brand. And so that's the additive part. Now, when we get into the commercial space, Vanguard, relative to Briggs & Stratton, is a much younger brand. And in that space, we've got to be mindful that we can't just expect everyone to know it, everyone to appreciate it. We go to market with a concept of, you know, trust Vanguard power, because we believe we've innovated. We believe we're delivering differentiation in there that is meaningful to our equipment makers as well as the end users. And for the distributors and dealers in between, if all goes well, that makes it easy for them to recommend and advocate for the brand. But to do that, we've got to make sure that they're familiar with what we're doing, they're familiar with how it is distinctive, that they believe it. Oftentimes, that turns into tactics like direct communication or advertising on a targeted basis. It turns into training and events. Tomorrow I'm headed to Louisville, Kentucky, the biggest trade show in the landscape and turf care industry is taking place this week, Equip Expo. And it's an interesting arrangement because we have an internal booth where we show our products and we engage with people. And then there's an external demonstration area where people can actually jump on equipment and try out a zero turn mower and see, okay, how does this thing work? How does the power feel? What are the attributes of it? And that combination of see and do ultimately are good concepts for us even after a trade show in terms of how we show up, do product demonstrations, go to dealer meetings, allow people to sample the experience and start to believe in it. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on the reality of today as well. We need to amplify all of that across every channel we can get access to, whether that's press coverage or social media or finding people with a certain following who are willing to influence. We're going to take advantage of all of those opportunities to take the experience on site and then extend it to as many people possible.
Probably oftentimes relatively brand heavy, especially for the Vanguard brand.
You know, I would say there's always a balance there. I have a bias. My approach to marketing is that marketing is all around fundamentally establishing and nurturing high commitment relationships. And so, you know, being trustworthy, instilling confidence, sometimes even inspiring people. Those are meaningful attributes right alongside fuel efficiency and torque and power and the things that we tend to talk about in terms of product attributes. You can't necessarily tease them completely apart, though. So for us, it's important that we take the points of distinction and differentiation versus our competition and articulate them and put them in the right relationship with why Vanguard is a brand for the people we serve. Right? Ultimately, that's what I want. I want a guy who's cutting lawns professionally in South Florida or who is working on a construction site in the Northeast or is in an agricultural environment here in the Midwest. I want the people who are buying the equipment that we power to know Vanguard's for a guy like me. I can rely on it. They're there. If I ever have a hiccup, I get the service that I need. They solve my problems.
So you want your users to be committed to the brand as being in the same way many people are committed to the kind of truck they have for truck guys.
Well, and so Marcus, for me, that's almost self-evident, because in our language, we use the same verbs and adjectives for brands that we use for people. Right? If you think about a brand, you love it or you hate it. I was disappointed by it, or I was surprised by it. So for me, brand awareness is interesting, but brand commitment is ultimately something that is value additive. If I can predispose somebody to say, Vanguard is the product for me, to walk into, let's say you've got somebody who's got a fleet of, I don't know, 20 zero-turn lawnmowers, right? And these are investments, thousands of dollars for each piece of equipment. And this guy's running his business and he's got a fleet of these. If he believes Vanguard makes him more productive, he's going to walk into his local dealer and say, you know, which of these three competing brands offers Vanguard? Which of these three competing brands gives me what I need to actually be more productive, more profitable, have fewer hassles? That's how commitment shows up. And so that's what we're ultimately driving towards. And I think the obligation on our side as manufacturers and producers and suppliers is to never betray that trust, is to continue to live up to the expectations. Because just like in human relationships, the higher the level of commitment, the greater the sense of betrayal when there's a moment of disappointment.
Oh, wow. I never thought about looking at a brand that way. You're so correct. That is very true.
Yeah, that is why, from consumer packaged goods to entertainment brands to, you know, hard good manufacturers to service providers, it is why it is so inherent to live up to the commitments that are made. You know, I've witnessed this, people who were dedicated to, let's say, a hotel brand, bought into the loyalty scheme or an airline, and then they have a terrible experience and they will not go back. Right. Yeah. So again, you can never take that level of commitment for granted. You've got to earn it every day, every hour of every day.
Absolutely. So I started to ask this question and we got sidetracked a bit. What are some of the channels you use to connect with the end consumer to help them understand the message and understand the value of Vanguard?
Well, there are a few things that we do. Obviously, there's a role for traditional advertising. We don't run the kinds of budgets that would put an ad on the Super Bowl. But that doesn't mean that we can't look at a target audience and actually reach out to them directly. And then, you know, we augment that through all of the tools that are available today in terms of search engine marketing and optimization and certain digital spaces. We can look at social media channels, and the joy there is we can organically put messages out that bring the audience to us, but we can also pay to boost those and reach people who have similar characteristics but may not be paying attention or may not yet be aware. We're always going to look at opportunities to positively earn media coverage. So again, we're going to the biggest show of the year this week. Touch wood, right? By the end of this week and the beginning of next week, there'll be some coverage on some of our innovations and some of the customer success stories that we have. We constantly want to build those up. And then I think there continues to be a role for person-to-person interaction. And so that's also part of it, is making sure that, you know, the sales teams at those dealerships get the support they need, get the questions they need, have the information they need, have the insights and the implications of those insights. And we'll do similar things as we look into the retail space for consumers to make sure that we work with all parties to ensure that everybody's successful between us and ultimately the consumer who walks in and buys a lawnmower.
I was thinking about the channels, the B2B versus B2C components of your marketing campaign as being somewhat separate, but indeed they're very much the same. As you sell directly from a business to business to your dealers and distributors, you're educating them on the value, which they are then turning around and educating the consumer, which continues to build a brand.
Yeah. The specifics of how to act on that will vary. So if I'm looking at the construction space, right, I might look at, okay, well, people who are working on construction sites who are actually doing that job, where do they get their equipment? They may buy it. They may rent it. Oh, rental. All right. Now I got to think through, where do you go to rent stuff? And, yes. You know, and so the structure, the actual details of the structure between the path between us sitting here as a supplier of engines and electrification and ultimately the end user, there may be different lily pads we got to hop across.
So that's a real challenge for you, stitching those lily pads together. What is your biggest challenge, would you say, in the space that you're in right now from a marketing perspective?
I think the reality is we're in a space that is both mature and evolving. And strategically, combustion engines are going to be with us for years to come. There's no way to get out of the power density around liquid hydrocarbon fuels. And at the same time, we've got to be able to embrace elevated emission standards, greater fuel efficiency, electrification, because if we don't, we're going to end up complacent. And leaving altruism aside for a moment, just in order to earn our market share, to uphold the commitment that we have to those we serve, we need to continually evolve our thinking and embrace a spirit of experimentation, an ability to deliver new products in the marketplace. And, you know, that's where the Vanguard brand is truly exciting, because not only do we deliver a robust set of solutions for power application with combustion engines, we've got this electrification business that continues to grow, continues to become more relevant to deliver innovative solutions out there. And ultimately, many of our customers are going to continue to have to grapple with that same transition. And so, you know, the equipment makers who we serve are grappling with a similar set of issues. And we just want to make sure that we don't lose sight of the balance and the importance as we look at both electric and combustion power applications and help our customers succeed in their marketplaces. And so I externalize when people ask me what my greatest challenge is, you know, I'm competitive by nature. I want the brands that I'm working on to win in the marketplace. And so I'm constantly just kind of pursuing, okay, so how do I anticipate better? How do I see the trends? How do I have a leverageable insight that I can act on with better cycle time than my competition to take that opportunity? Those are the things that get me, you know, up in the morning and excited about work every day.
So cool. All right. Well, let's talk about maybe taking a little bit out of the specifics of Vanguard and Briggs & Stratton. And let's talk about like more general things. Because when we were talking before, I thought you gave me a couple quotes that I really liked. One of those was when we were talking about the intersection of brand and demand, you said, we don't generate demand. We identify pockets of demand. I'd like to hear more about your thoughts about that.
Well, you know, for me, it probably goes back to college economics class. You know, demand is not something that you flip on or flip off with a switch. There is demand out in the marketplace. The challenge is to access it, to deliver a proposition that gets the people who have those demands to say, I'm willing to reach into my pocket, fork over my hard-earned cash for your proposition. And I think even where there are new opportunities or new markets, often I would characterize it not as making demand or generating demand, but identifying that there's sort of a vein to be tapped. It might be under the surface and latent, but there are problems to be solved that up until now people have had to satisfy around or not solve.
All right. Another question for you.
Sure.
You worked at a variety of different brands. And, you know, obviously there's some parallel to what you did at Mercury Marine and Briggs & Stratton, but with Lumen Institute, BP and Redbox, what are some things that you've learned or maybe insights you could provide to our audience about marketing that kind of span the breadth of those experiences?
Well, you know, in one simple question, what you've highlighted is I'm not an industry specific guy. There are a number of people out there who very successfully sort of establish themselves in a niche or in a segment, and they're, you know, the guy for, agricultural equipment or engines or toothpaste or whatever it happens to be. That's not my means of succeeding. I tend to believe myself to be someone who can help an organization and teams transform and access greater levels of competitiveness and growth and ultimately profitability. So, you know, what I've learned over the years is there are some basic things to ask and consider before starting down the path of doing. And I think fundamental to that is to ask the question, how do the people we serve feel about us? And that it's a simple question.
As a brand.
As a brand, as a supplier, as a relationship partner. Because, you know, it's a simple question, but it's got layers to it. So, you know, for the end user, oftentimes it's, how do I feel about the widget that I've just acquired or the service that I've just paid for? What are the attributes of it? Does it make me, you know, feel more successful or solve problems for me, et cetera? But at the same time, there are business-to-business elements that are similarly branded. They just may be associated with the enterprise, not the product or service solution. And so we also need to think about the brand, in my case, Briggs & Stratton as a company, and how our customers who interact with us on a daily basis feel. Are you taking care of my problems? Are you anticipating my needs? Are you easier to do business with than your competition? And, you know, whether it's oil and gas, when I worked at a little company called BP, or it's working in a consultative services and innovation focused environment like Luma Institute, or it's making engines for boats at Mercury Marine or power equipment here at Briggs & Stratton, we still need to think through those other elements of how we do business, not just the products that we give out. Because I think we've all experienced moments in our lives when we think, yeah, that's a good thing, but I don't want to get it from there, right? You'll want a certain type of food and you're picking between two restaurants. The tacos themselves may not be all that difference between two options, but there's one where you feel appreciated, right?
Yes.
You walk in, people say hello, the atmosphere's good.
Yes.
Remember your name. So now you've got differentiators that are really not built around the product, but are value added because of the interaction. And I try to keep that in mind, no matter what the product or service is that I'm working on.
All right. Well, let's pivot a little bit.
Sure.
How about you? I know you're into music. I know you're a guitar player. What are some of the things that energize you, Gary?
Well, to be really honest, I get excited about stuff like this. I'm rampantly curious. So I'm constantly sort
Me
of
too.
Occupying myself with the challenge of being better, delivering a better experience, helping my team be better. I would say, you know, that's an internal motivation. That's not something that comes from external incentives. I'm just constantly trying to figure out how might we fill in the blank to be better, to achieve better, to do it. I would say I'm also motivated by challenge. I've been hired a couple of times in my career. I had a guy at one company say, we've been looking to fill this role for almost a year. We think you might just be crazy enough to help us solve the problems in this space.
I love that.
And that to me is motivating. I love the unsolvable riddle. I love the pernicious problem. I want to sink my teeth in and say, okay, let me get after this. And in that particular case, it was a company here in Wisconsin. They had a business, their largest and most profitable business, and they couldn't figure out how to make it grow. It grew 2% a year, whether they ignored it or whether they threw money at it. And that was a problem for them because other parts of their business were suffering some challenges. So I came in and without boring in all the details, a year later, we'd gotten 2% up to 7.5%.
Oh, awesome.
And
well done.
So that's not, you know, that's not going to get front page headlines in the Wall Street Journal. But for that enterprise at that moment in time, the acceleration was meaningful and helped address some other issues. And I get really excited about that. And then on a personal basis, I've got kids. I they're all of a certain vintage now. The youngest are in college. I still love attending their events and supporting them. I play soccer still. I've conceded to age, so I play over 30s now. But I still play soccer. I keep guitars out and handy at home so I can play music if I want. And I would say I probably read a lot as well. But family and some of those other activities are sort of good, alternatives when the brain needs to take a rest from the challenging problems of the workspace.
So cool, for sure. All right. Well, if you're a soccer fan, do you follow the Premiership?
I do.
Who is your club of choice?
My club of choice is Fulham, an effort in dedication because they are not the biggest nor the richest of the clubs over there. But I fell for Fulham many, many, many years ago and still.
By any chance when Dempsey was playing for him?
I was a fan long before that. The backstory is Fulham hit hard times and was so challenged that they almost fell out of the professional soccer
in
England and had to ascend through the various leagues to regain their glory. And I started following them back then and then was able to keep tabs on them as they started signing players from the States. Casey Keller played there. Brian McBride played there. Clint Dempsey played there. Right, Tim Ream. Right. So there's been a steady group of Yanks who've contributed. But I love the club just for who it is and what it is.
Gary, it's been so great talking to you. I'll leave our listeners with this. What is one thing that you wish you would have known 20 years ago that you know now?
Oh, I would say I came to this realization not just by myself, but with the help of others, including probably a bit of therapy. It is okay to believe in yourself to the point that you stand up and leave a bad situation. I think there are many of us who feel like we got to stick it out. We got to tough it out. And oftentimes there's real benefit on the other end of that. So there's this nuanced moment, between, kind of too good to stay or, too bad to stay, too good to go, in which it's okay to say, this isn't working for me. And sometimes that can be applied to a strategy in the workplace. Hey, we're trying it. It's not working. It's okay to acknowledge that and redirect. Sometimes it's, I'm not in the right team right now. I've evolved out of my current role. Sometimes, I'm not planning on that in my current position. I still get excited every day coming to work. But sometimes it's like, I need to work someplace else. Not subjecting yourself to the trials and tribulations of bad circumstances. And I mean truly bad, right? We've all witnessed people, friends and family, who found themselves in a toxic moment. And our encouragement to them is get out.
Yeah, there's a difference between adversity and toxicity.
You got it. And so just, learning how to calibrate that and having the self-confidence or the self-awareness or the self-assuredness to sort of say, okay, time for a change. That would have changed the trajectory of my career early on in a couple of instances. And, I may not be sitting where I am, so I'm happy by how everything's evolved. But I just encourage everybody to understand that and to be careful in how they talk to themselves, because oftentimes what we externalize on behalf of others is different than how we talk to ourselves. And stakeholder one is yourself. You've got to be able to take care of that individual.
Sure.
Not just support other people.
Got it. Love that. All right. Well, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, how do they do it?
Well, I think I'm the only Gary Lancina or Garibaldi Lancina on the planet. So you can find my LinkedIn profile. That's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. I'm open for connection there. And I hope this has been valuable for you and your listeners. I'm incredibly appreciative of the opportunity. And I would just say on a one-to-one basis, Marcus, you're a good guy, and I hope we stay connected.
Oh, indeed, for sure, Gary, especially now that we've got the premiership and music in common.
There we go.
Well, thank you for joining us. And thank you, everybody, for joining us on Directly Speaking today. We hope you enjoyed the content. We hope you enjoyed getting to know Gary a little bit better. And we look forward to having you again with us soon. Take care, everybody.